my mic, just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year, we turning fear into love. And the love's in the air, I love doing this cause nothing compares. Nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc, I rip to a tear. Switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in, full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio, once again with your host Nick Burnaby here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Thank you all for tuning back in, and I'm really happy to be back. We had some kind of issue last week on Wednesday where I couldn't connect. I think we've solved the issue, and obviously there was a little dead air time at the beginning, but whatever, we're going to get through that. Make sure you guys go over to the antimedia.org and sign up and upvote and submit links. We got a bunch of great stories coming out, a bunch of amazing developments happening on our end of the spectrum. I'll be able to talk more about it in the coming weeks. But just know, we're still trying to improve this independent media movement, and we know that we're kind of a standard bearer of it, and we're doing some interesting stuff that I think is going to have a major impact over the next several months and years. And we're going to be looking back at this time and just saying, oh, those are the good old days, right? The good old days when Trump hadn't done too many horrible things. Because right now, what are we talking about? Covfefe? What is the shit that Donald Trump tweeted out today?
Covfefe.
So yeah, I don't know if he's inventing his own language or what he's doing. We're gonna talk a little bit about that. Obviously, we're not gonna spend too much time on it. I don't know if DB wants to dedicate the whole hour to this, but I don't know, he might. Anyway, let's just get started here since we got a little bit of a late start. I'm joined by my longtime co-host DB Schwartz. What's up, dude?
Oh, not much, man. Just waiting for the other shoe to drop with all the circus activities accelerating.
Well, welcome back. And glad to have you on. And Jake, welcome to the show, man. Glad to have you back too.
Kofifi, thank you. Yeah. I'm the same as EB. Slow news week. It's been, they overloaded us. The Matrix overloaded us about a week and a half ago. Remember when all that stuff was coming out and everyone was losing their minds? And this week, all we have is Kofifi, which, by the way, no one's going to take this from me. I'm going to be getting a dog soon, and that's going to be the name of my dog. I'm not kidding.
What's up? That sounds like a good name for a dog, called Kofifi, right?
Kofifi. It's beautiful. It's the one good thing to come out of the Trump administration.
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty hilarious that it kind of broke the internet. And I was like, I was sitting there thinking, like, damn, I wonder if he was sitting there typing this thing out. And then there was like a coup attempt on him, and then he just hit send, and that was it. So, you know, the mind goes crazy, and it stayed up for a couple of hours. That's all. I was like, why is this thing staying up? That's just strange. Anyway, also joining us tonight is our guest, Amir Dendenham. What's up, Amir?
What's up, guys? How you doing?
Being in there, just processing all this shit going on, because it's constant nowadays. You know, it's always been, when we started this show, we've been going at it now for like almost 4 years, I think. It's always been constant, but it definitely seems like there's been an acceleration of news ever since Donald Trump was elected. And, you know, I'm still trying to understand what the whole point of it is, because, you know, of course, not everything is planned out, but not everything is an accident either. So there's obviously some reason for this acceleration of news. And today, our top story, 5 things you're missing while the internet obsesses over Kofifi and Kathy Griffin. Obviously, there's major, major distractions going on right now. If we're seeing the media and the pop culture and social media kind of erupt over some superficial stuff, then there's always other issues that we should be looking at, because they're going to be getting ignored. And many times in those occasions, that's when they pull the wool over our eyes and carry out some stupid, crazy, pass some retarded law through Congress or something. And, you know, something just happens where it's like, shit, I wish we would have known about that, but we were too busy talking about Kofifi. Amir, I invited you on actually last week, but the show where we were going to go on was when we had that technical issue. But it was still, at that time, we were still kind of in the aftermath of the Manchester attack. And all the blowback and all the different angles and stuff that were coming out of that. And now we've started to see a little bit more of the involvement, I guess you could say, of the Western governments in radicalizing this young dude who, I guess, was Libyan. And, he went to be several times, and you know, that's apparently where he was radicalized. So, Amir, I mean, first of all, welcome to the show, man. Tell us a little bit about what you got going on right now, and what do you make of this whole Manchester thing, all the blowback and all the just hand-wringing and all the accusations and all this cultural crap going on, man. Tell me your insights on this.
Yeah, so I mean, This is just blowback 101. We've been talking about this for years now. You know, it was Ron Paul who really popularized that term, blowback, about a decade ago. And it's real. I mean, all you have to do is put yourself in those people's shoes, and you have to ask yourself, well, what would I be doing here if the Chinese military decided to invade the coast of California to give us democracy and freedom? I'm pretty sure we'd be taking up our guns and saying the Chinese need to get out of here. So if they keep doing that over and over and over and over, eventually some of us are going to decide to go over to China and fight them over there. Not a lot of us, because most of us won't have the money or the means necessary to do it. But, you know, there might be some American dude born over there in China, and then he gets radicalized because his family's dying over there in California. So all we have to do is put ourselves in their shoes and just understand when you're bombing and killing people for years and years and years. I mean, the U.S. government has been bombing the Middle East now for so many years. We can't even go back and really count how many it's been. I mean, the imperialism in the Middle East with the U.S. has been over 100 years now. The bombing has been 50 years and more. So, you know, it's no wonder that these people are getting radicalized. What blows my mind, though, is I'm surprised more people aren't attacking the West. Like, they kill, the Western governments kill so many people all the time throughout the year that it's hard to even get a legitimate death toll of what the U.S. government is engaging in regards to killing all across the globe. Like, nobody actually has even a close number. I mean, when we talk about Iraq, we just say, like, rough estimates are like a million people. And it's like, we just say 1 million people, and we don't even think about what a crazy number that is that our government is killing. And, you know, so I don't expect this to stop if the bombs continue. So when these people get caught, or when you read their Facebooks and hear their messages and stuff, usually it has to do with imperialism, or it comes back to imperialism in some way, where these people are just saying, well, we were just trying to live our peaceful lives, and then these random guys decided to come over from some other place. We don't know them. We don't have their culture. And then they said they're going to make our lives better. So, you know, like I said, I expect this to continue. I just wish that there was more light put on, you know, like in Kabul the other day, like 90 people died because of some bomb that was there. You know, and we don't see the outrage from the media and just the national conversation when dozens of people die in Kabul in a terrorist attack because, well, whatever, you know, they're brown and they're Muslim and, you know, so, but here's the awesome thing though. I always try to kind of look for the positive spin on things recently. Like, the 2016 elections really just took a lot of negativity from all of our souls, I feel. And, you know, in 2017, it's kind of in my mind, I'm trying to kind of just like rebuild the love and positivity that kind of got torn down in the 2016 elections. And the one thing that I'm noticing now more than ever is that people are talking about the reasons why this is happening instead of, I mean, obviously the last 20 years has just been like, we need to blame Islam, we need to blame Islam, we need to go bomb this country. But now for the first time, like, people are just reading through these people's Facebooks and actually seeing what they had to say. So the governments can twist the narratives as much as they want, but when you and me can just go type in some dude's name and then literally go see everything that they were saying, then we really get the truth. And it really does shift the conversation to a more centralized conversation where government gets to control it, to a more decentralized conversation like the ones we're having right now.
Great points, dude. Great points. I mean, I agree with basically everything you said. I just want to kind of build upon what you were saying. Now, this is from the Wall Street Journal. This is the dude that was the Manchester bomber, or whatever you want to, whatever, what was it, a suicide bombing or something? The Manchester bomber, this is what his sister told the Wall Street Journal. Quote, "I think he saw children, Muslim children, dying everywhere, and he wanted revenge. He saw the explosives America drops on children in Syria, and he wanted revenge. Whether he got that is between him and God," end quote. So obviously, the guy was out for revenge. Now, of course, does going and killing people because you're mad about people getting killed make, you know, is that the way to solve our problems? No, obviously not. But does it kind of make sense? Yeah, it kind of makes sense. If someone's killing your people, then you're going to get upset and you may want to kill them back. And yeah, you know, the guy was probably had some major issues. And, you know, if anybody that kills anybody has major issues, unless it's directly in self-defense, I mean, anybody that kills anybody, the guy in Portland just several days ago, that guy obviously had mental issues. Like, people that kill people obviously have problems, but this guy's sister just basically told us the motive. He was seeking revenge for the stuff the U.S. and the U.K. have been doing all across the Middle East. Now, in order to kind of highlight this, I'm going to pull a couple of stories from our main story on the anti-media, the five things you're missing while the internet obsesses over Covfefe and Kathy Griffin. I just can't get over that word. It's hilarious. All right, here we go. Scrolling down. Okay. Opposition to Trump's $110 billion arms deal with Saudi Arabia grows in Congress. Okay, so, and it kind of ties into the whole Kathy Griffin thing too, because you know, we've talked about on this show several times about Saudi Arabia and the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia and how we sell them tons and tons of arms. Now, Donald Trump, just a couple days before the Manchester attack happened, had just got done sealing a deal with Saudi Arabia for a record arms deal worth $110 billion up front, and then I think it was over $300 billion over several years. And, you know, everybody knows that isn't completely brainwashed, that ISIS is at least somewhat supported by Saudi Arabia, whether it be through the royal family or directly from the government or rich individuals in Saudi Arabia. Everybody knows that there's a connection there between Saudi Arabia and ISIS, right?
Well, also there is their official connections between Saudi Arabia and the 9/11 hijackers, and the United States government already has that on official paper. So this is not an opinion or anything. This is a known fact that these people are funding terrorists that attack Americans.
Yeah. And so, you know, Saudi Arabia goes around backing these ISIS and Al-Qaeda type groups, either directly or indirectly, and basically they're carrying out a geopolitical function which functions in favor of the United States. Now, of course, that's not what they're going to tell you officially, and that's not what, you know, according to our government, they're over there fighting against ISIS, and we're not there just as an excuse to have our military inside of Syria to pretend we're fighting ISIS, which to me is maybe a little more realistic. What they tell us is that they're over there fighting against ISIS. And so that's what makes it so strange that Trump, who campaigned against radical Islamic terrorism, against ISIS, and in fact, he several times had criticized Saudi Arabia over what they're doing, you know, and you know, their ties to 9/11, their ties to ISIS and stuff, and the fact that they were giving money to Hillary Clinton and all that. You know, Trump talked about all that stuff during the campaign, and I think it resonated with his people a lot. And now he's going over there selling them all kinds of weapons, and so it really does run contrary to a lot of the messaging that came out of the Trump campaign. To me, it was like political suicide for him to go over there and do what he did. And I don't know who or where his base is at right now, but I can't see them really jumping out of their seats to support him. But
ironically, the mainstream media was all in support of it.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like they jump all over Trump for the ghosts, the Russian ghost in his closet, which we've still yet to see any shred of proof on. And they jump all over him for that. But then he goes over there and sells a huge record number of weapons to the people who support ISIS. And it's like, it's all good. He's working with our allies and stuff. But back to the point that Amir was making initially here. Just reported today, the U.S. killed hundreds of people so far this week in Iraq and Syria. Hundreds. And, you know, we're not talking about just today or yesterday, but daily we're talking about dozens of people getting blown up in the Middle East by U.S. foreign policy. And it's, to me, it's just so strange.
And well, you know, I want to bring up a little point real quick. It's like, we, okay, so that Portland stabbing happened last week, right? Two people died in America. This has been a national controversy and a huge, like, emotional, big national moment where people are coming together and everybody's mourning. That's two people. Now, imagine if you were the size of Los Angeles and then you had hundreds of people dying every month brutally in these types of ways in public. Because, you know, we hear, oh, they got stabbed in the neck on the train, and we're like, oh my God, how horrible. But people don't actually think about how horrible a bomb is when it drops on you and what kind of pieces of metal it stabs into your body and all these horrible things. So, you know, this is how outraged we are after two people die in a week. These populations are dealing with hundreds of people dying in a month, and these are much smaller populations and much smaller land masses. So going back to my original point, I'm so surprised that they have the power to not be fighting back as much as they, even more than they are.
Yeah, I mean, it's surprisingly, for now, you know, small blowback, but, you know, the big one may be coming sometime soon as well. And then, you know, of course, it's like 9/11 2.0, and then all the work that we've been doing is going to, part of it's going to be, you know, we're going to be set back, and there's going to be a huge wave of nationalism and stuff. I mean, it's not a matter of if, it's when, because we're dropping, how many, what was Obama's rate? I forget. It was like, he was dropping a bomb every, God, I can't remember. It was like 26,000 bombs just in 2016. The rate was just crazy, the amount of bombs. And so when you drop in 26,000 bombs on a region, and you're not getting attacked back, well, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. You know, and who knows when the next big attack is going to happen, you know, that's going to cause a huge, huge, you know, 9/11 2.0 type of nationalism and patriotism thing. But yeah, dude, I mean, it really is mind-blowing that, and what really gets me is that people even care, like, because on one hand, it's like, oh, well, if you can't see them, you know, I guess that it's not that big of a deal. But at the same time, whenever there's a terror attack in Europe, in Western Europe, it's like, oh my God, there was an attack in France and Paris, and it's so sad, and we're going to change our Facebook picture to a French flag and the British flag and all that stuff. But yet today, there was a major, major terrorist attack in Afghanistan, and they're saying it was one of the worst ever. 90 people were killed by a suicide bomber.
Yeah, and about 300 to 400 people were wounded.
Yeah, 400 injured, 90 killed. But where's the Facebook filter? Where's the, you know, where is the empathy, the sympathy for the victims of just someone who, you know, people who are just in just a little bit further east? Amir, yeah. I mean, what do you think causes this kind of, you know, selective outrage?
Okay, so one of the really cool things I saw today in the face of this tragedy that happened in Afghanistan, I was scrolling through my Instagram feed, and then I saw some, like, one of my friends posts, and it was, like, about the Kabul attacks and then donating money through this one Venmo account that can help some people in Afghanistan. And I was like, whoa, that's the first time I've ever seen, let's donate money to the victims in the Middle East or somewhere that's not Europe, you know? So, or some kind of close, like, little American island that we're always, you know? So it was really, really nice to see that. And also, I grew up around an Afghan community in the Bay Area. So I have a lot of Afghan friends. And actually, the thing that I've been noticing, the positive twist on this is, these people are changing their profile pictures and stuff to Afghan flags. Like, it's pray for Kabul. I've never seen things like this before, really. So on the scale that I've been seeing from this attack. So at least, you know, something slightly positive is coming from it. And like, I keep going back, like, my theme for 2017 is, like, love and positivity, because, like I said, we've had too much piss and shit the last year. So, you know, this is the bright side of these negative attacks that are happening. And another cool thing is that, since the communities in America and Europe are becoming older, like when I say the Afghan community, it's like these are all my friends who are our age now, going into their 30s, becoming professionals, becoming, you know, valuable members of society. So people are listening to them for the first time. You know, when it was our parents' generation and some bad thing would happen over there, you know, our families being first generation immigrants, most of them like did not have the voice or the ability to be able to bring light to these issues that were happening. And it's really nice that, you know, the younger us, like, you know, the people who were born and raised in America here can actually bring light to these tragedies when they happen. Because now, I mean, California is full of Afghans. It's a big, we have a big Afghan community in California, and seeing them bring light to these issues from positions of power, I mean, there it's like you see these Silicon Valley executives and stuff who are Afghans, and you know, they're just coming out and raising awareness. So, you know, yeah, a lot of people died, but at least people are like seeing that this is happening now more so than ever. It's really hard to get people to care about some place like Afghanistan anyway. You know, the first thing that the average person thinks when they see a headline, like I'm reading the CNN headline, it's like Kabul blast, attack kills 90 near diplomatic area in Afghanistan. And then the average American's mindset is just going to be, well, yeah, doesn't that happen there all the time? Like, it's a war zone, isn't it? You know? And, but now that we're finally starting to humanize these people, I see a positive change coming, and the humanization going back to the whole social media aspect of being able to go look at these bombers' profiles and all this stuff, taking the positive twist to that, what we can do is now I have Facebook friends from Afghanistan. They literally live there and like in rural areas and stuff. And I can see what these people are doing. I'm connected to these people. And you actually get to see these people as humans for the first time, really, and have that real human life connection with them. You look at their likes and you're like, wow, this dude in Afghanistan likes the same music and same sports and all, you know. So because of this connectedness that we have, I'm hoping that when there is inevitably another national tragedy, as you said, because that's how government keeps their power. You know, they have to keep manufacturing tragedies for their power to persist. So I think that the next time happens, it's going to be a huge chink in the armor of the power and control that, you know, just the global state apparatus has as a whole, and really just take away from people's faith in government, because people are asking questions now more than ever. I have people just coming up to me all the time asking me about all this libertarian and anarchist stuff that I've been talking about for so many years. And it's blowing my mind when my grandma asked me about Bitcoin, you know? So you know, things are changing for the positive. I'm just hoping that our, you know, positive push can be happening fast enough to be able to fight the evils of statism. I think the next 5 years are going to be really fucking awesome. So
yeah, dude, I'm there with you, man. You know, I found myself, I went through a little mini depression after, not right after the election, but you guys, you know, I talked about it here on the show. I had almost lost hope for a second there after, not directly after the election, but after I realized, like, holy shit, people are really buying into this stuff. And then people here in San Diego were marching in favor of James Comey, the former FBI. Like, I almost lost hope. I was like, what the hell is going on? People are completely losing their minds. This is insanity. Since when are people, when are activists, quote unquote activists, marching in favor of the FBI? Like, we're supposed to be marching against it. You know what I'm saying? And I was like, shit, man, I'm losing hope. But luckily I got over that little period, and now I'm kind of feeling where you're at, Amir. I'm feeling really hopeful, man. And we're launching a big new huge project, not directly at the Anti-Media, but it's going to be a subsidiary partnership with a bunch of other people. Can't talk about it yet, but it's bringing me a lot of hope. And one thing I noticed, more to your point here, in the wake of the Manchester attack, the articles that we posted were mostly You know, of course we posted just, okay, here, this happened, and, you know, this is what's going on. But we posted a bunch of alternative angles here, which I guess focus a little more on the blowback angle and the UK being complicit angle, which is, you know, the UK led the way on overthrowing Gaddafi. Gaddafi literally warned, who was it at the time? Tony Blair, I think it was. Gaddafi literally warned Tony Blair personally on the phone. He said, hey, look, if you guys don't, if you guys take me out, you guys are going to get terrorism coming to your shores. And they didn't listen. They did it anyway. And sure enough, that's what happened with this kid that wound up being the Manchester bomber. In fact, it gets even deeper. The British government allowed him to travel to Libya with the intent of fighting against Gaddafi, you know, and they knew that he was becoming radicalized. And in fact, his own peers alerted the authorities that they felt he was becoming dangerous. And in fact, someone even said that, reported him saying that he was talking about how suicide bombing isn't necessarily a bad thing. And like people in his community, other Muslim people, reported it, and the British government kind of let it go. It's kind of like the same thing that happened with several of the recent terror attacks that happened here in the U.S. With the Orlando guy, he was on their radar, and then of course the Boston bombers were previously interviewed by the FBI, and who knows, they may have been groomed by the FBI, because you know the FBI is always trying to set these kind of, you know, they kind of create the terror plots and get patsies to fall for them, and then they make arrests and they're like, oh, look, we stopped terrorism. You know, and so a lot of the articles that we did that focused on the counter angle here, the blowback angle, or the fact that the government is just kind of enabling this to happen in one way or another, those articles did very, very well for us. Those were the ones that were going viral. So, you know, back to like what you were saying, man, like people are now more willing to look at this information and digest it and give it a chance, because maybe before, when like everyone still had this 9/11 fever, you know, you couldn't question anything, but at this point it's worn off so much that now people, are willing to question this stuff. And like you said, I mean, we're getting older. We're starting to have stronger voices. You know, people are willing to listen to us now. And now we can start spreading these ideas. And I hate not to be an asshole or talk shit about old people, but you know, the baby boomer generation, they grew up under, you know, Cold War propaganda. Like their brains have been conditioned much differently than the average millennial and the average person that's younger than that, because we get information in different ways. But you know, as the baby boomers get older and they start losing their influence, and I mean, not to be, again, I don't want to be an asshole here, but you know, they're going to start dying off and stuff. And the people that are our age are going to be the ones that are now the ones kind of calling the shots for our culture and for our society, because, you know, the millennial generation is bigger than the baby boomer generation now. And so this is one of the reasons why I'm hopeful, because people like us are the ones that are going to be influencing society, I think, for the better in the coming, you know, 5-10 years. You know, I bet we'll, I wouldn't doubt it if we saw a millennial president pretty soon.
Yeah, and you know, I totally agree with you on that. It sounds like kind of an asshole thing to say, but I say that I have a similar sentiment that I repeat a lot, which is just like, I don't think we're even going to achieve our global stateless societies until this baby boomer generation really starts, and the generations before them too, start dying off. And it sucks to say, because like, that's literally our parents and our grandparents, you know, we're like, well, I guess they all got to die off before we have a better world. You know, we're like talking about our parents and stuff here, but so like, it sounds kind of dickish, you know, but it's the reality of it, because what you just said, these people were programmed differently. And what it really comes down to, and what I'm starting to notice by, you know, I'm diving deeper into the whole cryptocurrency world and stuff recently, and I'm just starting to realize that there are just two different main types of mindsets in the world. And it's, you either have a centralized mindset or you have a decentralized mindset. And
if you try to understand decentralization when you have a centralized mindset, it's so hard. And that's why it's so hard for people to understand cryptocurrencies, because they're all coming at it from a centralized mindset. And then I'm telling them, well, you can't think that way or else you won't understand it. And then they can't think otherwise. So that generation was so programmed into that centralized authoritarianism where it's like everything needs to go to them. Of course, like everything in society should go to them. And then for us, we're just like, no, of course not. We just want to do things ourselves, hang out with our friends, like take care of things ourselves. So this is a very positive sign for the future, because even more so, you said the generations after the millennials. I do freestyle calisthenics. I compete in this sport, and it's nice because I get to hang out with a lot of younger people, and seeing what the 14 to 18 year old age group is doing today compared to how we were in just regards to the maturity levels. It's mind blowing, you know, seeing how people deal with bullying, for example. It's just these little trends that I notice. Like when we were younger and we used to see bullies, we used to get in fights with the bullies. You know, like that was the only way we knew how to handle the conflicts. It's like, well, you're going to hit the smaller guy. If you don't stop, I'm going to have to hit you because I'm just as big as you. And then that's kind of how problems were solved. But now, you know, 15 years later, we understand that, you know, hitting people and getting hit isn't really the best way to solve problems. So it's really cool seeing like these young kids. I was asking these 17-year-old kids, I was like, so how do you guys deal with bullies at school and stuff? And he's like, we just talk to them. I was like, what do you mean you talk to them? Like, what if they say they're going to hit you or something? He's like, we just go with a bunch of dudes. Like, he's not going to hit us or anything, you know? I was like, man, that's so cool. You know, that's a 10-year gap right there. And in like one decade's time, we went from beating each other up on the playground to like literally sitting there and talking it out. And these are kids, you know, these are the people that we'd be expecting to fight it out. And then on the other hand, you have the people who are the exact opposite of their age, the baby boomers, and then the people who are older. And these people are still acting like immature kids. You know, my time in the Republican Party, I swear, like half my time there was spent babysitting old people who were just trying to fight each other all the time. And I'm constantly sitting there going like, hey, guys, I'm the youngest person in the room. And I'm telling everybody to be quiet and to calm down. What's going on here? You know, so what it's really making me believe is that the future is so bright that we're going to be seeing some changes that we've never seen before in regards to peace and love and positivity in like this next 5-10 year time period. So that's why it's like, while Donald Trump can be doing all this bad shit and it seems like the masses are falling prey to it, as they are and as they always do, one of the things that I've really, that's given me a lot of comfort over the last year is that we don't need the masses for revolutionary change. All we need is just this small group of dedicated people, which is us. And we just keep doing what we're doing and keep doing what we're doing and just going and going and going and going. And then eventually you have this project that you're talking about with the anti-media and other people and growing and, you know, achieving something that can actually fight the state apparatus, you know, and just growing in this certain way. I mean, we've talked about it before. Like, I'm trying to live in a free voluntary society in my lifetime, you know. I want my kids to grow up in a free voluntary society. So, like, we're not fucking around anymore. That's kind of what I'm telling people now. It's like, stop focusing on all this negative stuff that's going on, because there's some bright shit that's coming up in the next few years, and it's going to just change the way we all look at the world. So, you know, forget the masses. The masses are going to follow. Once the masses see how pleasurable and how rich they can be and all these things, they're just going to come over. And that's why things like cryptocurrency are bound to become mainstream in the next few years, because people will simply realize that it's just better for their lives to use this than government alternatives.
Exactly, man. So I want to talk about some of this decentralization stuff, because you know, Derek Bros is going on his Decentralize Your Life tour, which is going to be an amazing experience for people. He's going around a lot of the country. I know here in San Diego, I'm going to be helping organize the the venue and what we're going to be doing. And I'm guessing Derek and his crew are going to crash out here at my place or whatever. Before we go into that, I want to go back to DB, my co-host here, because, you know, we talk a lot about this generational gap. And I know DB is brought up several different points here, some of the stuff that you were just talking about. But, I mean, DB, do you want to chime in on this real quick?
Yeah, I mean, just everything we talked about for years, Nick, is just a commercial reality now. I started looking into these Tesla solar roof panels, and I mean, especially out where there's a lot of sun, that stuff not only pays for itself, but it gives you a positive, and the energy companies start paying you. I mean, this stuff's now available. So, I mean, the paradigm and what he was talking about as far as things getting better, they're just going to naturally get better. Gas and oil are dying. These last wars are for the last stranglehold of the last big pools of oil and gas. They're going to be worthless in 10 years no matter what. So that's why they're fighting so hard for them, because they're greedy bastards. And there's nothing they can do to stop it short of a World War III that sends us back to the Stone Age.
Yeah, I think we're at the tipping point, or we're soon to be at it. And a lot of things are changing really quickly. Okay, let's go back to this decentralize your life stuff, because this to me is probably the most important thing right now. And Amir, you made a comment about, you know, how if we start doing this stuff, the masses will begin following. And I that's something that I can't stress enough, because it's so hard to, you know, that's how we get discouraged, is trying to go and take this thing head on and thinking we're going to go take on the federal government, Donald Trump and them head on. Yeah, sure. We can have our victories here and there, and we can do things against the government that stops them from doing even worse statist or wars or surveillance or whatever they're trying to do. But I think the real way to get a really big victory is by changing the way that we do things at a personal level, and building up our communities around ourselves that embrace these ideas of freedom, and not only freedom, but shit, prosperity too. Because Amir, you mentioned the cryptocurrencies, and Derek's tour is sponsored by Bitcoin.com. And you know, I've been recently, you know, investing in Ethereum and Bitcoin and stuff like that. These are all ideas that are decentralized ideas. And that's one of the things that Derek stresses a lot. And we're going to have him on the show probably pretty soon here in the next week or two. See if he'll come check in while he's on his tour with us. But decentralizing our lives, whether it's with Bitcoin and decentralizing our banking, or if it's with just our local communities and our own, you know, agorist ventures and the way that we spend our money. These are probably the most important things right now. And it's not going and taking down Trump or taking down the neocons or the neoliberals or stopping Hillary Clinton. I mean, those are good. It's good to do that stuff too. But I think the way that we can really have the bigger impact and can see more positive real life results is doing this stuff right there at your own, you know, start where you're at, start in the apartment that you're in, and start embracing the philosophy of just decentralization. You don't have to be a libertarian. You don't have to be an anarchist. You don't have to be an anarcho-communist. You don't have to be a Bernie Sanders supporter or whatever you want to call yourself. You don't have to. All you have to do is start embracing these ideas of decentralization, because those really are the decentralization, self, you know, self-determination, really, and self-reliance. These are just some of the very few principles that most people can agree on that are good things. Who wants to say, no, I don't want to have, I don't want to control my own fate. I don't want to be able to make decisions for myself. I want some asshole in the White House to make decisions for me. Like, who would actually say that? Like, do you know anybody in your life where you said, hey, I have a question for you. Do you want to be able to choose what you eat for dinner tonight, or do you want Donald Trump to choose what you eat for dinner tonight? I mean, and just breaking it down into a simple question like that, well, obviously everybody, even Donald Trump supporters are going to say, well, yeah, I'd rather choose what I eat for dinner tonight. Well, then shouldn't you apply that to all the other aspects of your life as well? And so that's what it is to me, man, is that if people embrace the ideas of decentralization, self-determination, and eventually self-government, once enough people start embracing those ideas, even if it's a small minority, but if we were able to crack like 5 or 10% of people to start thinking and acting that way, that would cause extremely powerful waves throughout our entire society and throughout our communities. And it would empower us, especially as, you know, younger people who have become victimized by the economic system. And many of our friends and many of my friends have been victimized by this economic system. They're in massive amounts of debt. My friends who have college educations are massively underemployed, many of them, and we've been kind of sold like this false, many people have been sold a false dream where they told you that, you know, one thing was going to happen and then reality is a lot different.
I was sold a false dream. My parents told me all my life, if I get good grades, go to a good college, get good grades there, I'll graduate and then I'll have a really good job and I'll make a lot of money. Then I went to one of the best schools in the world, UCLA. I graduated and I couldn't find a job. And I was in thousands of dollars of debt. And that was this American dream that they promised us. If you just go to the best schools, you'll get the best job. Bullshit.
Seriously, right? And so embracing this idea of decentralization, not only are we embracing more freedom, but we're embracing more economic independence here. And then our economic fate, you know, is placed into our own hands instead of being placed in the hands of the Federal Reserve or the Wall Street bankers or the stock market. Because we all saw how it turned out in 2008. I don't know about you guys, but I was not too young, but I was just not in a situation to own property back then. I still don't really own any property besides my personal belongings and stuff like that. But you know, a lot of people that I know got wiped out. The older people I know, some people in my family, my parents got wiped out by the housing bubble. And that is just a lesson to be learned. We need to not be reliant on this crazy centralized financial system. And we shouldn't be putting our livelihoods and literally the places where we live in the hands of these, you know, bureaucrats and stuff. And that's really where financial decentralization comes into play. And these cryptocurrencies are so amazing because one thing that just really makes cryptocurrencies look so much more attractive than dollars is the fact that these currencies are not centrally owned and centrally dictated by some unelected bureaucrat. The currencies are mined decentralized, you know, in a decentralized way by your own computer. You could mine these things and you could mine the currencies. It's like mining gold, but it's digital. And then there's the only rules governing it are completely transparent and open source for the most part. And, you know, you can see what's going on. Of course, you got to have some technical ability and stuff. But unlike cryptocurrencies, the Federal Reserve is an opaque organization that does things the way it wants to do things. In fact, Congress can't even really do anything to the Federal Reserve. The president can't really do anything besides nominate like the chairman or the chairwoman of the Federal Reserve. The president can't really even do anything about them. They do what they want, and there's no transparency. We don't know what the hell they're doing. And they create these huge bubbles. 2008, bunch of people got wiped out. The whole country got wiped out. In fact, half the world got wiped out by that financial crisis. Europe hasn't even recovered from it. And so, you know, people all around the world got screwed over by these bankers. And it's about time that us millennials start saying, you know what, we're done with you guys. And we're turning our backs on you, and we're going to go about things in a whole different way. And that's, I think, where Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies come into play, because these things are it's the future of banking. And, you know, in the future, you're going to be getting your houses on Bitcoin. You're going to be buying your car on Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And it's going to take all the power away from central banks. central banks are a problem all around the world. Every country, basically every country, has a central bank. These are the institutions that have been, you know, screwing us over from, you know, day one.
And, you know, another thing I want to bring up is when these cryptocurrencies we're talking about, one of the scare tactics that I've been kind of hearing is like, oh, well, these big corporations and these governments are all getting in on it, like Ethereum. You actually have like legitimate governments and the biggest corporations in the world getting their hands on it. And then, you know, people are using it as like a scare tactic as to why it's not going to be good. But my argument back to that is it's great. Bring them all in, because then they're forced to change their mindset to that decentralized mindset, because they can keep trying to play that game in a centralized mindset as much as they want, but you just cannot succeed. It's not the game. It's a different game. So when people are talking about like Bitcoin bubbles and all these things, I'm like, what are you even talking about? This is decentralized. It's a whole different world that you have to think in to actually understand how these things work. So, like you were just saying, it's going to take over the entire world. And because of that, it's going to help that anonymity and privacy that Americans or the world has kind of given up on in the last 20 years. Like, we live in a post-privacy world, kind of, you know? So it's going to be cool watching us kind of shift back into a world where we are able to retain our own privacy more.
Yeah, that's another aspect of it, is, you know, maintaining privacy, anonymity. And, you know, we're gonna be talking about agorism a lot more, because, you know, this is the future of activism is I think lays in agorism. And this is something that Derek is also going to be going around, spreading around the country. And I just want to say how cool it is that we have a guy that we know that actually works with us at the Anti-Media that's going around the country spreading the gospel of agorism. Like, it really is a sign of the times. It really gives me hope. And a guy like Derek, so brilliant and such good messaging, he's going to go around the country spreading the seeds of freedom right now. Literally, like, the seeds of freedom lay in agorism. And Derek's going to be going around the country spreading that. And this is going to be, you know, years from now, the people that see him talk and learn from him are going to be spreading these ideas, and it's going to be catching fire.
I got to say, I am so stoked on exactly what you're talking about right now, because, you know, Derek gets a lot of shit from a lot of different groups of people and stuff, but he's one of the only people that is literally putting his body out there on the streets to really spread the message on a level that we have not seen before. And the way that he's essentially shifted his messaging, it gives me a home now. When, like, you know, we have the homie like Sterling Lujan talking about relational anarchism and all these things, like relationalism, and like what Derek is doing, what you're talking about with agorism, like, it's this bright new world of activism where we don't have to sit there like debating about road building, and instead we're just focusing on this relationalism that Derek's going around the country pushing now. And, you know, it's something that I'm so excited to just see him come out and see what he has to say. You know, him talking about things like freedom cells, you know, it's like, damn, why have we not been talking about this years ago? We would have been a lot farther. So we've been spending the last 10 years of the movement essentially just debating philosophy. And now it's like we've graduated past that. And now people are actually getting out on the streets. One of the interesting things that you can find from Derek's work is you could really tell who the principled people are and aren't, you know, because Derek goes out there and he's like, I don't care if they're communists. Let's go try and find common ground. And it's like, and then you have all these people who are going like, oh, well, you're a communist yourself then, you know? But it's like, that's what we've been trying to do out here in California for years and years and years now. And I think because of what we've done and kind of like how we set up our lives, like, I mean, Nick, all your homies, like your close homies you grew up with, they're not all anarchists. They're not all these like philosophical anarchists, you know? But because of the work that you do now, and because they're your homie, you know, if stateless society were to come down there, they'd probably support you, you know? So I try to do the same.
Buddies, I don't know where they all stand at politically, but they're all they're all at least partial agorists at this point. And that's what I think, you know, you said it, man, the change in messaging that is going on right now with the people who are really starting to make a difference, like Derek, is key here. Because what we're talking about with agorism and stuff, it's basically non-political direct activism, right? It's like non-political direct action. You're taking action as an activist without having to necessarily involve politics. You know, and so I've got friends who voted for Bernie Sanders, who I can say are basically agorists, you know, and I've got friends who have been anarchists that haven't voted in 30 years that I would consider agorist as well, you know, and then I've got people that are definitely more conservative that I know that are also in that same category, dude. And so this is what's so awesome about non-political activism, and by taking action from an economic standpoint, is that you don't have to agree with people politically, like not even at all. Like you can completely disagree. You could be doing agorist activism as a right-wing libertarian working directly with a hardcore socialist doing economic activism together, and you wouldn't even realize it, maybe. You know, and you know, me, Amir, we've had these discussions before. You know, you do business with people who you may disagree with completely, but the act of doing counter economics is an act of non-political activism, and that's why that's what makes it so easy about finding ground here, common ground, is that you don't have to agree politically. I want to bring Jake back into the combo here. Hopefully he didn't fall asleep at the phone over there. Jake, you still there with us?
Yeah, I'm here. I did fall asleep, but it's really, really interesting what you guys are talking about.
I wanted to ask you about, you know, finding the common ground here. I mean, what do you think? Because, you know, I know you've been talking about this left-right alliance as far as like the progressive libertarian alliance and trying to build something up kind of like the Ron Paul, Ralph Nader alliance type of thing. How do you think that kind of factors in here with, you know, the whole agorism thing, counter economics and all that stuff?
Well, it's a different tier of it. I mean, I definitely think that the level, the direct action and the kind of direct, you know, what Derek is doing, what we're doing through the site and through, you know, all of our collective actions is the most important, because it lays a foundation for personal credibility and responsibility. But at some point we will have to engage with, you know, we're not going to dissolve. I mean, there's going to be a messy process of the state coming to terms with itself. And I think that's going to require a broad, massive coalition of people who ultimately have more control over the neocons and people like that, who aren't going to just relinquish control because people have a few Bitcoin, you know, like there's still a massive, massive power apparatus that is keeping us down. Not to be a bummer, not to, you know, there's lots of reasons to be hopeful, but we still have a massive adversary ahead of us. And part of that is going to be building a political coalition so that, you know, pushing out the regressive people, and like you mentioned earlier, with some of the older generations of people, as they push out, new people will come in, people who their constituents are more on our side. And it's just going to be a natural, fluid process that's going to happen over the next couple decades. I definitely think it's coming, just like you are. I think a broader coalition at the macro level is probably, it's important too. Not as important, but it's important.
And, you know, I think the big thing here is buying our time, because we've got these insane people running the show that have access to weapons that can destroy the world. We need to buy our time and process it to happen. But we need to just make sure that we really see it happen. Take over to you when we're calling reality, because there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. This is
live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Listening to UCY.TV